What I'm learning is to prioritize. How can I be beneficial to whatever it is? How can it be beneficial to me? Should I do this now, or should I just wait till later, or should I just say, let's find someone else? It's about prioritizing and seeing, you know, do you actually have the time? Do you actually want to do this? Or are you just doing it because somebody else wants you to do it?
Welcome to the How Leaders Think podcast, the show that transforms you by renewing your mind and giving you new ways to think. I am your host, Kenny Lang, and with me today is the Aranda Hamilton. I feel like there should be like a crowd noise whenever your last name gets said. I don't know if you're being announced for like the NBA championship or you're coming out like it's boxing and I have the announcer, but we'll think about that. We may have to build something into the show.
Yes.
Rhonda is a criminal justice professor at Tyler Junior College, which I went to briefly.
Yay.
Whoop whoop. She's a professor, Tyler Junior College, with extensive experience in the field. She is also a U.S. Army veteran. She served for 20 years, 4 months, and 8 days. That I feel like if I asked any veteran, they would probably tell me the exact same thing. I'm sure you know the number of seconds, but we'll let that be a teaser for later in the show.
Okay.
She remains deeply committed to her community and is passionate about advocating for veterans, advancing criminal justice reform, and empowering women. Welcome to the show, LaRonda.
Thank you, Kenny. Thank you for having me.
It's going to be fun. I'm excited about this. I know we had a little bit of gap between our coffee meeting and today, but we're making it happen. Tell me, LaRonda, what is on your mind?
What's my mind at the moment, Kenny, is this work balance thing. I mean, I literally just got off another Zoom and I'm like, everything is overlapping. How do we get to this work balance?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many people I've spoken to that talk about work-life balance, and I hear some people advocate for it. I hear others say, I think balance is a myth because you're always out of balance. Like, it's a lot more work, a lot more home. I've heard some people to introduce new words, work-life integration, work-life harmony.
Wow.
What have you observed, or what are you hearing as you talk to people, whether students, colleagues, whoever? Like, what is the thinking and the prevailing wisdom you're hearing about this topic?
Well, I'm hearing that this old ideal of a perfect 50-50 split is kind of out. Now it's more about trying to find a life where we work and then personal time, how it flow together. And we're trying to find some way that's sustainable and healthy. So that old 50-50 way is out the door. And sometimes it can be hard, like for me, to find that work-life a boundary. Just because you can work anytime doesn't mean that you should.
Yes, I love that. And which kind of ties in what you're saying about like just being on Zoom calls, being on video calls. Now, obviously, we're recording virtually just because that's the logistics of my podcast. But we both live in Tyler, Texas. So we could have done this in person from Panera. Although there'd probably be a lot of background noise and my editor would shoot me. But as you think about, like, we could, like, with so many remote workers and even you're in the higher education system where hybrid classes or purely online degree plans are more and more the norm.
Yes, absolutely.
What, how have we taken the opportunity to have more flexibility in our work? And for some, like full-time students, their work is being in school. That's their full-time job. How have we started to overdo it, right? Like, without getting super nerdy and into like calculus, the law of diminishing returns sort of thing, like, hey, flexible. And it's like, now I think we're overdoing it. And We're working longer. We have fewer breaks because the Zoom calls can be right up next to each other instead of having a little gap to go get a to the water cooler, coffee pot, break time, back to your office. Like, we don't have a lot of that anymore.
No.
So when did we start to shift? And what's the negative impact that you're seeing that this has on people, or what are they sharing with you?
Okay, well, I can tell you what it has on me. A lot of times my Zooms are not back to back. Sometimes they're running at the same time, and I'm either on a Zoom on my laptop and a Zoom on my cell phone and trying to give both my attention. Yeah. Yeah. True story.
All right. You're true like, story. No, I'm looking at you. I'm looking at you. It's like a constant press conference for LaRonda.
Yeah. A camera's off on one and on the other. It just depends what my role is on that Zoom. So the emphasis now is about like trying to protect my non-work time, maybe actually logging off and setting some type of Slack boundaries, trying to normalize that, put my phone on do not disturb. And sometimes I'm kind of afraid of putting my phone on do not disturb that I might miss an important call or miss an emergency call that's happening. I need my attention right now. Right. So it's scary for me setting those boundaries. Right.
Absolutely. Yeah. Depending on your position or your role in certain teams and projects or companies and departments, right? If you're really a servant-hearted leader, which I know you to be, then your heart is to be there for other people and leverage your influence for good. And so it can feel like letting those people down by not taking their call or not having your Slack on green, you know, the available status 24/7. I know a lot of pastors who deal with that as well. Like, I can't have, I'm on date night with my wife, and that's vitally important for anybody, for any marriage. Somebody's having a tough time with something and they need the pastor. Like, where do you draw the line that's healthy for both the people you're working with and need you and for yourself? How do you start to draw the boundary for yourself and in such a way that you're not sort of steering into the other ditch and you're just totally aloof and unavailable and everything's on your terms, but you're also engaging with people in a way to let them know, like, hey, I need you to respect this boundary. Here's when I'm available to you. Here's when I'm not, because I'm available to, say, your children or something else, or just basically, you're not paying me for 24/7.
Right.
Right. Like, you didn't buy my life. You got my working hours or my project. How do you start to draw that in a way that is healthy? Because I think I've seen some people steer into that other ditch to where they overcorrect and suddenly they're never available.
They're never available. Well, we know one size does not fit all. And I am a working progress, you know, when it comes to work-life balance, setting those boundaries, because I do have a problem with saying no because of what you said. Want to be available, want to be there for those who need me, that sometimes I put myself on the back burner. So I'm a work in progress. You know, we're trying to find out what this work-life balance is, because like you said, sometimes we overcorrect and we find ourselves in burnout. And then after it happens, instead of designing a system that prevents it in the first place, we're being reactive and trying to find our ways back to some type of normal life where we fit ourselves in on our own schedule.
Yeah, there's a couple of things that come to mind with what you just said. One would be, where do you think the responsibility lies? Because you start thinking about the leadership, like power dynamics, right? It's one thing, let's say, in your case, you're a professor and you have students and you want to be reasonably accessible to the students to help them achieve their learning outcomes. But you have bosses, you have deans of a department or something like that. And, and of course, these structures can, you could just extrapolate that to whatever your work scenario is, whether it's a nonprofit or for-profit corporation or a small business. Where do you think the responsibility lies for that? Because you could be an employee who wants to set a healthier boundary, but your boss, your direct supervisor, is sending you messages at all hours and on the weekends and time off work hours, and you don't want to be rude or disrespectful or piss them off and get fired, but you also realize it's unhealthy if you were to respond to all of those versus like, should, so in that case, should the boss be responsible for regulating expectations, communications, or is it on that employee to communicate up, or is it somewhere in between?
Yeah, good question. And the bosses, the leaders should definitely be leading by example. They should also be mindful of their employees with supporting and encouraging, taking that vacation time, maybe having to take a mental health break, because like with me, this time of semester, it gets really busy. We're trying to finish everything that we didn't get a chance to finish in the semester and preparing for final exams and projects and everything else that has to be done before the semester ends. So just understanding and being okay when we come with a leave form is saying that I need this day. I need a mental health break. It's becoming overwhelming. It's becoming over-consuming. And just being mindful and being okay with that, as well as leading by example.
So, number one, I hear you saying, like, obviously, I think leaders go first on this. If you're Simon Sinek, leaders eat last. But I do think that they need to set the example and the tempo, which is why email, Slack, basically most of our communication tools today have a like schedule to send later. Like just because it occurred to you now doesn't mean it's the right time to communicate that. You could have an idea on a Saturday, write it all up and schedule it to be sent on Monday.
Yeah.
Right. So there's some simple technology helps, but you and I both know just changing systems, processes, and technology doesn't really fix the problem. It can support the solution, but the problem is really in the relationship and the mindset of those people. Now, you said something a minute ago about leading and sort of living from this place of constant reaction, right? If I'm constantly reacting, I don't have the boundaries, I'm constantly like, who called me and this, that, and the other thing? And then your follow-on comment about it's just work, everything is overwhelming, so for stimulating, I need a mental health break. Do you think the constant reactionary frame of mind that some of this always on communication, very flexible work environments where it's not confined to just a building or an office, is contributing to a greater need for those breaks? Because I would think the ideal is you create a work culture, a work environment such that those sort of mental health things aren't necessary apart from just stressors of life, just like you and I were talking about before we started recording with what I'd been through with my wife or things like that. Like those are things that are unrelated to work, but do influence my work. So what do you think being reactionary is a key contributor to the need for greater mental health days, breaks, vacation, things like that? And how do we start to build a work environment that allows for that room to breathe where people can be highly productive and highly healthy?
Yes, I definitely believe that it is a reactionary when it comes to trying to set those boundaries. I love my students. And sometimes they may wait till the last minute and send me.
No.
And I know, unbelievable.
Students are always on it and very proactive.
Yes, you're absolutely right. You are so right. But those who may tend not to be proactive may have a tendency of sending me an email at 2:30 in the morning, because they've let the 11:59 deadline pass.
I've never done that.
You've never done that.
No, that I can't identify with what you're saying.
And we also have things set up to communicate, such as like the Remind app. And so I know I tell my students that they can send me messages to remind, but I guess what I need to sort of say is that not after 9 o'clock. Was sending me,
or when you send it is not when I will respond.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. Just having that cutoff time. sometimes I do have problems with sleeping, and I wake up and I look at my phone and there's messages from students. So it just depends. Do I get up and respond, or do I just wait and just hold out till the next morning? So usually on that, I do set boundaries, because usually I wait till the next morning before I respond. I attended a conference a while back with Women in Higher Ed, and there was a presenter, and she said something that I have heard before, but it resonated more at that time. And she said that no is a complete sentence.
I love that.
And I was like, wow, you're right. Just no, not right now, or let me think about it, or let me get with you later. And
let me pray on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good go-to. It's like, you know what? Let me pray about that and get back to you.
So that is another thing that I'm working on, because sometimes I am stretched with the demands of work and with being a community servant. Mm-hmm. So when do I make time? And I get asked that all the time. When do you find time for you? When do you just make that downtime, or when do you say no? So that has definitely been resonating with me a lot lately. And just trying to determine, what am I going to say no to so I can fit myself in on my own schedule?
Yeah, I think that's a tough question for a lot of leaders to answer. Actually, I just a little bit ago got done talking with a very wise friend. She shares questions and thoughts with me that end up haunting me for months. She's a real blessing. But she is. She's full of so much wisdom. And she was asking me the same thing. She's like, when are you doing things to take care of yourself? And I was sharing, I was like, yeah, I've had some of these conversations. These have been really tough. This relationship feels strained right now. And and we were going over some things. She asked me questions. She goes, that's why you're exploding. Like, why you had that argument, why you had this, is because you're not drawing those boundaries for yourself to refresh, to refuel.
Yes.
So I guess I would imagine most listeners to this show can identify with that, because they're high achievers, high performers, get it done. They get more done in less time, with fewer resources than those around them, like whatever the classic overachiever might be. And how do we start to evaluate, well, okay, maybe I do. I've said to myself, yeah, I should draw a boundary. I should say no. And I love the no as a complete sentence. How do I build a filter to decide what do I say no or not right now or whatever is appropriate? Because sometimes it is just no.
Yeah.
It's not the right opportunity. And sometimes it is, I'd love to do this, I just don't have the capacity. Could I do this in 3 months, in 2 weeks, and whatever? How would you suggest a leader start to formulate a filter that can make those decisions a little easier, but also allow them to feel like they're remaining consistent and in integrity with who they are and who they want to be?
Okay. Well, I know a couple of times that I've said no, I felt liberated, like I did it, you know.
You just went skipping off away from the person.
Yeah, I did it. And it felt good.
Right.
But when determining what to say no to or not right now, let me think about it. What I'm learning is to prioritize. How can I be beneficial to whatever it is? How can it be beneficial to me? Should I do this now, or should I just wait till later, or should I just say just find someone else? So it's about prioritizing and seeing, do you actually have the time? Do you actually want to do this? Or are you just doing it because somebody else wants you to do it? So I'm making lists, and I'm determining what I'm going to say no to and what I'm going to continue. Now, Dr. Kim Beckham would really be proud of me when I actually do this.
I'm sure he will be.
he definitely tells me about, when are you going to learn how to say no? I saw him at, no, it was Leadership Tyler, class of 36, best class ever. Just thought I'd throw that plug in there.
Can't hold a flame to 37.
But he said, next time I see you, I'm going to ask you for $20 to see where your answer is going to be. So I saw him again at an event. And he came, he held his hand out and asked for $20. And I said, no. He said, so you can say no. No is really in your vocabulary. Uh-huh. You just have to be willing to say it and put your best interest ahead of other things. Because if you're not well, and you can't do those other things if you're not well, mm-hmm. or you can't give it your wholehearted self. If you're overconsumed, and I'm definitely preaching to myself right now. So, again, I'm learning progress.
Yeah. Hey, the best way to learn something or cement it is to teach it. So that's
absolutely.
I'm just trying to help you cement this for yourself. That's all this is. I've already mastered this all, of course. Although I am pretty good about saying no when people ask me for money. Just ask my kids. But I would, what was I going to ask? It sounds like getting clarity around, like you said, your priorities, and within, I think priorities can be a big term. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to make some assumptions, but correct me if I'm wrong. But what are my top goals for my career, my personal life, my relationships, my finances, so that we can tell Kim Beckham, no, you can't have my money.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell him that the next time I see him, be like, hey, man, just don't even ask. And I want to marvel at his confused face. But also, what do I value?
Yes.
Well, what are my values for how I want to? And I loved how you said it's like, where could I actually meaningfully contribute?
Yes.
Because you could just show up to something.
Right.
And you didn't really make an impact, but you're just like, well, I was there. And
at the table.
But it's an honor to be nominated. And I think sometimes we do show up at those things. And I think some of this trial and error experience, maturity, something like that is like, there's no shortage, at least in Tyler. And I'm sure it's this way in probably every city, but there's no shortage of events for us to go to. There's a gala, gala. I can't even say it.
No, tomato, tomato. So
we could just show up, have no connection to the mission, to the purpose, to the event. We're not contributing. We're not speaking. We're not serving. We're just eating.
Yeah.
We're networking. And in that case, then it would probably be a violation of I value contribution.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you start to, and I love that you're making a list, checking it twice.
Yeah.
But it sounds like not only do you have a, like, here's my list of goals and values, but you also have like a, instead of a to-do list, like a to-don't list, mm-hmm. as I've heard some people call it. How did you start getting clarity for that? Because I think that's something so difficult for people to do in and of themselves. Like that, I mean, number one, that's deep work in my opinion. I mean, it's part of the reason why I even have a business is because people find it difficult to do that for themselves and their organizations. So they call somebody like me in who can help facilitate the conversation, reflect back what I'm hearing, untangle thoughts. How did you start to do that for yourself at the individual level?
Again, I'm still a work in progress. And
sure.
And with having so many people, I mean, on a daily basis, ask me, like I said before, when do you take time for yourself? When do you have time for yourself? Or you're so busy, or I didn't invite you to this party because I know you're always busy. And I'm like, wow, I'm getting told this every day, all the time. I need to sit down and I need to revisit all of these things that I'm a part of and put the priority. And I have resigned from two boards that I was on, and then I have three people who are waiting for me to say yes. So I'm just revisiting.
Little do they know they're going to hear a no. Not everybody can win the LaRonda sweepstakes.
There you go. So I just encourage this. Make that list, especially if you're part of umpteen things like I am, and whether the importance lies. Is this something you're passionate about, compassionate about? And if not, then you know, you have to go on and write their letter and tell them thank you for this opportunity. And I just can't fit it in right now. And again, I'm still learning this, and I'm, you know, trying to put it into action, trying to be proactive with it before my body says you need to sit down. You're being stretched too,
which is the worst outcome, right?
Right. So that proactive,
the body keeps the score.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because you can get so busy that things like working out. I used to work out all the time and go get my massages and sit and watch my soap operas. And now, you know, I have to catch the recording because I'm just so busy. So you just have to reevaluate, you know, what it is that's important to you. And if it isn't, just step back and let someone who it is important to take their baton and run with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Because there's, it, you know, the opportunities are not a zero sum game.
Yep.
Right. There's always more, which I hear you saying that part of your work in progress and what's helping you set boundaries is main either switching to or just maintaining an abundance mindset that there's always going to be, there's more boards that will need service, and the timing and the passion will line up. It just didn't right now.
Yes.
And being able to decline gracefully, like, thank you for this opportunity, which I think always keeps the door open for future. Like, maybe it's the right thing at the wrong time is the wrong thing, but maybe that timing shifts and there, and then that door's still open and you don't want to slam those shut just because you're like, nope, never. That's abrupt.
Yeah. You don't want to burn those bridges.
Yeah. There's no, especially if you're a leader on your way up or really any leader, that you know, you're going to need as many bridges as you can possibly get.
Absolutely.
And I'm not necessarily saying your network is your net worth, although I think that there may be some truth to that.
Mm-hmm.
But I've had relationships that seeds were planted years ago. And I didn't really, and this will sound self-centered or something, some insert negative word here, but I didn't really need anything from that relationship other than just, hey, I know the person, I think well of them, they think well of me, great.
Yes.
And we weren't close. But then there becomes this time where I go, oh my gosh, I'm in this situation in life and I need that person's skills, or they told me that they know about this thing or this person, they have this. And I go to them, and then because I've kept in touch, or I just had such a positive interaction when we first met, that they're like, oh, hey, so great to hear from you. Let's do this. Like, I had a networking call this morning with a guy who he reached out, and we talk about once every 3 months.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He's referred some people to me. He's going to be on the podcast, but what he does, I was like, okay, I really like what you do and how it helps. But right today, as he was talking to me, I realized, I was like, oh, I actually have a couple of clients that would benefit from this. And when we first started meeting, that wasn't the case.
Yeah.
But because we've kept a positive relationship, now I'm like, oh, hey, send me this, do this, let's talk here. I think we have some the opportunities are starting to come forth. But we met almost a year ago. And before that, it was just like, let's check in, let's chat. How you doing? What's happening with life?
Right.
Ask me about my wife. And I'm asking about how his family's doing, like just human stuff. Hmm. You can get so busy, but it sounds like one of the things that was so helpful for you in starting to evaluate all these positive things that you have going on and opportunities was just make that list of what are you already currently committed to?
Yes.
And really take inventory, get a sense of, if I say I feel stretched thin, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
What is stretching me thin? And if you write it down and you have a list of like 30 things and you're like, oh, Jesus, okay, well, this should probably be 10.
Yeah.
And you start to, because you can't prioritize a list that isn't written.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. I printed a monthly calendar and just put all the different meetings that I have, so I can actually physically see how I fulfill my weeks are. When do I actually have time where I can put myself on this calendar? And it may be three or four or five days a month that I actually have free to just for myself. Even my daughter told me, Mom, have you forgotten how to say no? Because every time she calls me, I'm in a meeting or I'm on a Zoom or something.
She's probably like, you never had a problem saying it to me. Did you get hit in the head?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So seeing it and then really comprehending, like, wow, I really don't have time for myself.
It stops being just all up here.
Yeah.
And it sounds like that's when you got it down on paper, actual, like, real life paper. It still exists, people. You got it down on paper, then you were actually able to take action with it instead of just bemoaning the fact that I'm stretched too thin, I'm out of balance. Oh, man, I should do this. And I should be like, your should all over yourself is the joke some people say. And how has that impacted as you've made the list and you've looked at the calendar and now you know maybe more clearly where those boundaries should lie? How has that impacted your life and leadership once you started to put all that down and maybe take some of the agency back in your schedule?
Absolutely. Being in the military, it teaches you leadership and developing a servant's heart. So when I retired from the military, the servant's heart did not go away. And I believe in being a community activist and serving my community. So, which led me to saying yes to a lot of things. And now I've gotten to the point where I'm involved in so many things. And I was like, it's okay to be a part of two or three different things, which you are still serving, versus being a part of 10, 11, 12 things. Because you carve out the extra things that you're part of. It gives you the more freedom to focus on those things that you really are passionate about, you really have a compassion for, and it's not being able to give your full self to, you know, what you're passionate about, because you have, not to say that the other things aren't important and that not passionate for, but I'm more passionate for women's rights, for veterans, and bettering the criminal justice system is where my passion lies. So you free up some of your time. You not only fit yourself into your calendar, but you can focus more on the things that are on the top of your list. And again, I am a work in progress.
It sounds like it's allowed you to shift into more of a quality than a quantity.
Absolutely.
A lifestyle, which I think most people would like. I do think that there are some people who they love the variety and they want to show up at everything and be the social butterfly. And if that's your priority is to be at connect with as many things as possible, then hey, like, just be honest about it, right? We're not ascribing value if that's where you want to be, as long as it aligns with your value, is what I hear you saying. Then just being honest with yourself so that you can be honest with others about where your commitments and priorities lie.
I love networking, and I love networking opportunities, especially with like-minded people. But like I said before, you know, that one size does not fit all. Somebody may be able to attend everything.
I know some of those
people. I was doing at one time, trying to attend everything. Because I love the networking and meeting people. But now, you know, my mindset is changing. And with some of the things I stuck with because I feel obligated, maybe it was the first people who pulled me on board or something like that. So I feel obligated. I feel like it was my duty to continue. But I'm learning that it's okay to step back and step down and let someone else step in that position.
Yeah, which when you're used to doing everything or you feel like, I can conquer all of this. I'll sleep when I'm dead.
Yeah.
Then that sometimes can be difficult to get started. But then you start to feel, I've had to step into that in some areas. It was really difficult at first.
Yeah.
Because I'm used to, I have a bias towards doing, like I think you do as well.
Yep.
It's like, oh, I see you something. I if I could help, then by God, that's who I am. I'm a helper. I'm take charge. I'll lead. I'll contribute, whatever. and saying no. Like, there was a great question I heard from an Enneagram teacher that helped her a lot, because she was just a helper,
yeah,
to her own detriment, like what we're talking about. And she had to start asking herself the question, what's mine to do? And that question stuck with me, because mm-hmm. I've listened to a ton of her podcasts, but that what's mine to do, and that's helped me filter some of that list of just because I can do it, just like you were saying, just because we can work whenever doesn't mean we should work whenever.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
So let's say someone's listening and they're like, oh my gosh, LaRonda, you just described me. I feel convicted. I should probably pray. But this is my life, and I'm doing a lot of good things, but I don't feel like I'm doing all the things that matter most to me.
Mm-hmm.
What's something they could do in the next 24 hours with little to no money spent that could help them take a baby step towards taking back control, finding this balance, whatever those percentages are for them? What would you tell them?
Okay, so I would say get that calendar, write everything down that you're part of, where you can actually see what you're all involved in and how much time consumption is going into that. Again, writing it down and physically seeing it gives you more clarity on what it is that you need to do. And then mm-hmm. just understanding, talking to myself, but just understanding that it is okay to say no. Mm-hmm. So you may want to practice that in the next 24 hours, just saying no and being more comfortable. You want to avoid stretching yourself too thin. And yeah. That's what I'm doing. That's where I started making that list. Mm-hmm. I have not sent out many resignation letters yet, but I do have the list and I do have the calendar, and I am praying about it, what I should step away from. So,
yeah. So you heard it here. Just go around, tell people no, and tell them LaRonda told you to tell them no.
No.
And then just like LaRonda, skip away from them. Just skip just as gleefully as
liberating.
You can. Hum, sing a song. I don't know. Birds will come to you like a Disney movie. Well, LaRonda, thank you so much for spending some time with me and sharing your wisdom and what you're learning right now. And as someone you've accomplished a lot in your life, and I appreciate your humility of just like, look, I've got all this, but I'm still learning, I'm still working, yes. I'm still trying to better myself. If somebody said, hey, you really sparked something for me, I'd love to follow up with you, maybe ask some follow-up questions or get your perspective, how could they connect with you, or where would you send them?
Okay. Well, I am on Facebook. It is actually mm-hmm. Hamilton LaRonda on Facebook. They can find me on LinkedIn. They can find me on Instagram, or they can email me at lrhamilton44@gmail.com.
Excellent. And we'll link all of that up. And I would be remiss if I didn't let you talk just briefly about the two books. So can you talk just a little bit about that? And then if people want to get them, how they do that?
Okay. So I co-authored two books. One is called The Crazy Girl in My Head Has to Go. And because we can get so overwhelmed and so overconsumed that it messes with our thinking, with our mental mm-hmm. health. So mm-hmm. I talk about my experiences from childhood up to now by different things that had contributed to the negative thinking
mm-hmm.
that I got from bullying experiences and things mm-hmm. such as that stuck with me through my adult life. And mm-hmm. how do you begin to change that and change your thinking and keep those things in the past? So that's mm-hmm. The Crazy Girl in My Head Has to Go. And there is another book called Trying to Love Them. Sometimes, Kenny, it can be difficult loving men. So I co-authored that book.
What was that? Did my wife just say amen from the other side of the house? Is that what she just did?
Well, yeah. I mean, if anyone is interested in purchasing either one, they reach out to me through those social media handlers, because I'm only selling them in person.
So. Okay. Perfect. Well, we will link up those ways to contact you in the show notes. So if anybody is interested in those books or asking further questions, y'all can look in the show notes on YouTube or podcasts to connect with LaRonda. But thank you so much for dropping some wisdom and having such a fun conversation.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And to you, the listeners, thank you for spending a part of your day with me and LaRonda. We hope that you got some value out of it and some entertainment too. So maybe we made a drive or a jog a little more enjoyable, unless you're being chased by a dog on your run, and then it was probably panic inducing. But if you would like, rate, review, subscribe, whatever the right button is on your platform of choice, it would mean a lot. If you leave a review, I'd love to hear feedback, the good, the bad, and the ugly. What conversations would you like to hear? What topics would you like to hear about? Do you want to hear more things like you heard today? Is there something complimentary that this sparked for you? Please let me know. As much fun as I have doing this, I want to make sure I'm always adding value to you and rewarding your choice to listen. I know you have many choices when you listen to podcasts, and I thank you for choosing How Leaders Think. I feel like an airline pilot. But until next time, change the way you think, you'll change the way you lead. We'll see you.